Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the Matrix shit. Let's go hook him up!
Pop any fireworks?
Not this year. We watched the space needle blow up, which is always fun.
Oh, that's cool.
And by the way, let me just go on a little tangent here. We have the worst local news crew in the States. You know, when you watch the ball drop in Times Square, you know, they got a little countdown clock, so you know exactly when it's midnight. Yeah, the local news here in Seattle decided they would show the Space Needle blowing up. Like, they have fireworks that will go up, 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 but when it gets to the top of the Space Needle, all these fireworks will shoot out. It's New Year's. No countdown clock. So, not exactly sure when New Year's started, but Kane 5, if you're listening, you guys suck.
That's funny. Katrina, did you make it to New Year's, or were you past that before, like last year?
No, I made it to New Year's. I went just to New Year's Eve party. That's about it. Drank some beer, had some fun.
That's cool. That's cool. No,
how about
you? Get any kind of trouble or anything?
Did I get in any trouble? No.
Yeah, that's good.
Did I get anybody in any trouble? I don't know yet.
How about you, Ed? What'd you do?
Well, to start off, like a day or two before New Year's, I had made a thing on Facebook asking if anybody wanted to go on a date. And I actually got one, but unfortunately she had to go out of town that day, so I ended up spending New Year's. it kind of worked out because I spent New Year's here because I had to go do the paper route. I left for the paper route like right after New Year's. Because I had to get that done because I actually had to drive with Barbara to Houston to drop off her son at the airport because there's no direct flight from San Antonio to Carolina. So I was able to get done on time to go with them, so it actually kind of worked out. But as far as New Year's itself, I spent it watching the downtown. I can see the downtown fireworks from my house, and I went out and watched that. But as far as going out and doing anything, I didn't do too much, but the date that I was supposed to go on then, I went on last night, and I'll just say that it was worth the wait. And
New Year's is overrated. It's another day just like every other day. It ain't no big deal.
Well, it's a day for people who don't normally go out and party, can go out and party. You know, not everyone's like you and drinks. Like,
you can go
every
out and party
or
whatever you want to. You don't need a day to tell you that.
Yeah, well, not everybody's like you, and it's not everyone's like an alcoholic, and they don't need, you know, they don't drink like that all the time. So,
that's not my problem.
I was actually hoping I could see Matt Clary. I texted him right before we got there, but unfortunately he was off doing something and didn't get the text till later. But we went to, I don't know, have you guys ever heard of an, I don't know if I'm going to say it right, an IKEA store?
IKEA, yes. It's Swedish made furniture that you assemble yourself, and if you're a cabinet maker, it drives you absolutely insane.
Really? But we stopped at one on the way out of Houston, and the next thing I know, we were wandering around this maze for like 4 hours.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's IKEA.
And spent some money on quite a lot of nice stuff, but it was crazy.
It drives cabinet makers crazy because, number one, it's cheaply made. But with that said, it's also cheap in price. And number two, if you want to put it together correctly, you need more than an Allen wrench and some screws. But
you know what? I got to give Barb credit because we got back to her house. She had bought like kind of a cabinet shell stand, I don't know how to describe it, but she actually put it together with just those little tools and did an awesome job at it. It looked perfect. So.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty cookie cutter. You have to be a blind retard to mess it up, so.
That's why I let her do it, and I didn't help it for pushing stuff down or holding stuff down. But anyway, let's start our subject. We are going to be talking about Ric Flair. And some of his greatest views are. The hell was that?
Sorry, that was me. I'm stoned.
Wouldn't me.
Way to mess up my concentration. I was trying to intro the show and
Now, hold on. Let's get this out in the open first off. Now, I get a Facebook message on, like, Wednesday as I'm frantically looking for guests for the first show of the year. By the way, I struck out. And I get a message from Cotrera, and it says we're going to talk about Ric Flair's feuds and basically to pick five of them. Lo and behold, we get to Friday, the day of the show, and now we're doing a show spotlighting Ric Flair.
Well, I figured it was just a better way to put a title on the thing, you know, because we are going to talk about his feuds, but we know we're going to venture into everything.
Okay.
I thought that was a catchier title, you know.
I suggested naming the show Greatest Rivalries Ric Flair, but that's too many big words.
Oh, that would have been great, actually.
Well, you could have taken the time.
I told you that when you called me today.
The day before, and, you know, this is your idea. I figured you were going to take care of everything, and then I was like, oh, shit, you didn't do it, so let me take care of this real quick. And,
Okay, well, go back in the thread and go back.
Don't call me at 5:30 in the morning no more.
Sometimes you Facebook me at 4:30 in the morning all the time.
That doesn't mean you can do it to me.
Oh, okay.
There's some logic in there somewhere.
Yes. But
awesome.
Well, this is your baby, so this is your idea, so I'll let you start off on the topic.
I forgot to make my list. It shouldn't be too hard. I'm going to go with one that I'm sure is like on. It has to be on both of y'all's lists, and that's probably Ricky Steamboat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably, to me, I guess that would be the greatest Ric Flair. I mean, there's some great ones, but, I mean, that's probably also one of the longest ones because they, you know, they feud it twice. You know, once before they were, like, super, super famous, and it was still just you know, the early 80s, but they wrestled, like, he's probably wrestled Ricky Steamboat more than anybody.
Yeah, that's cool, because he actually had two different feuds with him, possibly, you know, more. I mean, there was one in the late 70s, and then one late 80s, too.
Yeah, there was one in the late 70s, I believe there was when he put Steamboat over for, like, the TV title or something on TV. And that's pretty much what made Ric Steamboat right there. And then I think he did some stuff, like, in the mid-80s, like maybe 84 or, like, 84 or something like that. Maybe they had a few more matches. But, I mean, the big one, I think, is when everybody remembers is, like, the trilogy of matches they had in 1989 when Steamboat came back to WCW from WWF. And I think for, like, a series of matches, that's probably like maybe the best series of matches in history of wrestling, in my opinion.
Yeah, the Chi-Town Rumble sticks out, you know, because Steamboat actually Flair for the title.
Yeah.
And then there was another almost 1 hour match on the Clash of the Champions.
I was there live for that.
Awesome.
Now, the thing that made this feud work is it was just the two polar opposites. You had Ric Flair, the playboy, you know, the jet flying limousine riding, and then you had Ricky Steamboat, the family man, and, you know, just the cookie cutter. And, you know, it just worked so well, and they played off each other so well, and the build to the feud was so awesome. Like, one of the first things they did was for Flair was all dressed up, and I think had some women with him, and Ricky Steamboat came out and just stripped into his underwear and beat the living crap out of him on an awesome angle.
Yeah, they're doing spots, and he's in his underwear and his socks. That was awesome.
How many times has Ric Flair been in his underwear on TV? I bet you it's over.
I don't know. There's been times when he's been in there because somebody ripped his clothes off. There's been times he ripped his own clothes off and handcuffed himself with the ropes or something like that.
Well, I mean, you know, all you hear about is apparently he likes to get naked on all the fucking airplane trips, too. So, I mean, him stripping to his underwear, it's not something that he's not known to do.
I love to see the Flair show in person, like once in my lifetime, just to say that I saw it.
Right.
Yeah, on a plane, you're lucky to get Flair in his underwear.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No kidding. You're lucky you see him drop something on the back of your head like you did to the stewardess on the plane coming out.
He might tap you on the shoulder with little Nage.
Yeah. And to me, one of the most memorable things in this whole from those matches is just a little clip, 2 second clip of actually what's going on in the crowd. And what's going on in the crowd is the fact that you have in the front row Dr. Lucha Steve Sims and Dave Meltzer and his mullet, and Dave is marching out like crazy. Like, you just don't expect that from Dave. Dave showing emotion. It's something that's almost unbelievable, but there it is. And he's all jacked up, too. You know, he was taking his Isopro at the time. And that's just something I love. I love when they show the clips of from Ricky Steamboat was going into the Hall of Fame on WWE, and there's Dave Meltzer marching out in the background. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was really... really glad that I could have been there live to see Flair go into Hall of Fame. That's one of the cool things, you know, watching wrestling all my life and then seeing that and being there live. I was like, all right, this has been a pretty good run.
Are you upset that you weren't there the next night?
What's that?
Are you upset you weren't there the next night? Or,
yeah, I was there the next
night. Was Raw that Monday?
I didn't go to Raw on Monday. I went to Mania, and what I thought at the time would have been Flair's last match, but he pulled one over on me.
What team?
He probably had like a hundred
on anyone.
That's the thing that makes the Flair matches, you know, really known for, is because they were basically, for the most part, called in, you know, basically the last 5 seconds of the match was planned, and everything else they just called in the ring. And I guess you would say 90% of their matches, if not more, actually went 60 minutes to a draw.
Yeah. These two guys, I think these guys had maybe the best chemistry of anybody, of any two guys I've ever seen. I mean, I think you could put blindfolds on them and tell them to lock up, and they'd know where to go from there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and they really brought out, like, the emotion, like the stain for each other during the matches. Like the one for Steamboat wins, like the first move is basically Steamboat just slapping the shit out of Ric Flair.
Yeah, and they just chopped the shit at each other, and their hips are all bleeding and stuff. The first time I ever saw one of the big major stars submit in a match to the double chicken wing. In the 2 out of 3 fall match with Flair submit, I never seen him submit before.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was different.
but only a few years later.
Out of all three of the matches, I probably liked the one in New Orleans the best. Which ones did you guys like the best?
I like the one that Steamboat won the best.
Yeah, same here. The one that Steamboat won is, you know, in your memory because he won the title.
Yeah, I mean, I'd still say that, like, the 2 out of 3 fall match is probably, I think it's probably, for me, that's probably my favorite match of all time, best match I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was pretty damn good.
I like when they were doing what they kind of like, when they built it up with, you know, it was just like Steamboat. I mean, it was like Flair and Windham towing on and left, and Windham had been doing some matches with Eddie Gilbert, and Flair got involved, and they double-teamed him, and, he said he's going to bring in a mystery partner. And I don't know. Some reason I knew it was going to be Ricky Steamboat. I don't know. Maybe I read it in After Magazine or something like that. Then you heard the music. You know, it's like WWF music, which he used like once. What was it? Alan Parsons Project? That was
that sounds right, but I'm not. I've been wrong on this show before.
Chicago Bulls thing. I'm Scott.
Shoot. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Scott. That's it.
Anyway.
He came he came out and they had the tag match and Steamboat won, and yeah, that was great stuff.
And one thing that was great about that angle is up until he made his surprise debut, Eddie Gilbert was like almost by default the top babyface in the company. And it was kind of like a low point and a little talent. It didn't last very long, but it was, they could have pleaded, it seemed like, or something. And then Steamboat came back in a shot, you know, it's just, you know, you're going up a couple levels compared to Ricky Steamboat being your top babyface compared to Eddie Gilbert. And to me, it kind of led, like, into a good run of a few years for, like, you know, it was really good time for the company as far as matching good shows.
This is probably the last really great year of Ric Flair's career for me anyway, wrestling-wise.
I was going to say, I just watching TNA last night, and the promo he cut with Gunner, I was laughing so hard because I've never seen a man sell words the way Ric Flair does. it's just amazing. He just had me laughing so hard, and he's so great obviously he's great on promos, and he's just, his facial expression and just everything about him is, you know, as old as he is now, he's still awesome.
Well, this isn't the promo with Gunner, but this is from a couple weeks ago.
I told you, damn it all! I told you it was tough luck. Why don't you treat him like you treated me? Get your act together! No, I ain't gonna take it easy. Ric Flair, don't take it easy. You're gonna apologize to your old man right now, and quit looking at them. They're not gonna help you. They're not in the ring. You're in the ring with Ric Flair. I'm telling you, I want you to not only apologize, I want you to kiss my ass. Come here. Quit walking away from me. I'm not done talking to you. I said apologize. I'm not going to screw around you like your dad. I'm going to really mess you up. Apologize.
It almost sounds like you're going to stay sucking your mother's dick, but.
Okay.
But as far as telling like words, like you said, that's an example of it right there.
Yeah.
Who's he talking to?
Bischoff's son.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I remember when Vince McMahon flipped out. Remember when we got that promo on Randy Orton, said you like all those virgins I made bleed before? He almost fired him.
Yeah, he might have wanted to thought that one out
too far.
Oops.
So, do they have any more on the Steamboat one?
Nah. What do you guys pick one?
Actually, I could go next because. Actually, the timeline follows into this. Flair wrestled, and I'm reading off Wikipedia, I'm not going to lie to you guys. He wrestled Steamboat May 7th of 1989 at Wrestle War. And Funk ended up in the ring asking Flair for a title match.
Jimmy J. Funk?
Yeah. Terry Funk.
Oh, okay.
Terry Funk is my next.
Funk.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So Terry Funk asked him for a title match. Flair doesn't give him the match, so crazy Terry Funk pile drives him on the table outside. And this goes into the Great American Bash where they had the I Quit match. So my choice.
The what?
For the I Quit match.
Was at the New York Knockout. It wouldn't have the Great American Bash.
He is in Wikipedia, so we'll give him a break on this one.
No. I misread. They did wrestle at the Great American Bash, though, correct?
Yeah. You said it led into the Great American Bash I Quit match.
My bad. So they had the Great American Bash match and then the I Quit match. Excuse me, I misspoke. The I Quit match was phenomenal.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite I Quit match of all time.
Yeah, same here. It's awesome.
It's okay.
I love that.
When it started, Terry really wasn't wrestling that much at the time. He was actually doing commentary for a while.
Yeah.
And he was one of those guys that he wasn't good at it, but in a way he was awesome. I always cracked up when he was calling, doing the commentary on the show. And I think he was going, like, kind of doing, like, the post-match interview, and then it turned into him, like, asking for the title shot, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
He was the judge at ringside at that match with Steamboat. Remember they had three judges?
Yeah, there was three judges, and...
In case it went to a draw.
Right. And who are the other three judges?
It was Terry Funk, Luthez, and I think Pat O'Connor.
Good call. Look at the brain on this kid.
But this is like a drawn out feud, and with a lot of other people involved in it, like they get like the great Muda and Dick Slater, and
that Great American Bash match, that brawl they had over the Baltimore Arena, that was like one of the best brawls I've ever seen in my life. With Slater and Funk and Sting and Muda, they were just beating the hell out of each other for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, that was badass. And the infamous
garbage bag over the head of Ric Flair angle at the Clash of the Champions in September.
Yeah, that was a little crazy.
That's going a little bit far when you're trying to kill somebody. I mean, that's what you do when you're trying to choke them to death. Or suffocate him.
Yeah, he basically came running out with a plastic bag, put it over Ric Flair's head, and started taping it around his throat. It was freaking awesome, but people were outraged about it.
Right.
If somebody did that to you, wouldn't you just tear the bag open on your face?
Sure.
Yes.
It would fight a hole in the bag to breathe normally.
But hey, I'm surprised, someone did, they didn't say it was like attempted murder or anything.
You know, they had, right at the end of the show, they had Pillman out there. He was getting Flair mouth to mouth or something like that.
Did he cut a hole in the bag?
and they went into the Thunderdome cage match with Sting and Flair against Funk and Muda. The cage caught on fire.
Didn't Flair break Dick Slater's arm with the branding iron?
Yeah. Yeah, he did that on the Saturday Night Show.
Yeah. that was like Dick Slater's last, like, really run.
Yeah. I don't remember if he did anything else. He came back at one time with Dick Murdoch as the Hardliners. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, yeah, and they were actually pretty good.
Yeah. They were the collection agency for the York Foundation. I guess if you don't pay your bills. Maybe they're loaned to York or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
You're up.
Okay, well, I'm sure everyone is pretty much predicting what I'm going to pick as my first one, but I'm actually going to go slightly a little to the left and pick the one that wasn't as notable, but Ric Flair versus David Von Erich. I thought they had like a David actually feuded more with Harley Race, but he did have like a short feud with Flair. And the reason I picked this is because this is the one and only time that I ever got to see Ric Flair do a 60-minute Broadway dance live. and it was one of the best matches I've ever seen live, and I still remember pretty much everything until to this day.
I think actually one of my choices was going to be Ric Flair versus the Von Erichs, because he's such a big part of that Texas period, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could, yeah, because he pretty much feuded with everybody. I mean, the only Kerry is the big one. And then he did have matches with Kevin, like the year after Kerry had won, him and Kevin had a match where Kevin just beat the crap out of him, it seemed like, the whole match. And it was one of those matches where you, like, you swear to God, it looks like Kevin thinks it's fucking real.
Yeah, I can't comment on this too much. I mean, the only Von Erich stuff I ever saw with Flair was, you know, the stuff off of Lord of the Rings or whatever the after tape was back in the day. I mean, that's what I get for living in the Seattle area.
Yes, well, it was awesome. I mean, he would come to Texas, and he wouldn't just do Dallas, because he'd come to San Antonio quite a bit, like every couple months it seemed like he'd come, and they had the match. I just remember this match where, like, Flair was, like, blading within, like, the first 10 minutes and was just covered in blood, and they just kept going and going, and they just were covered in sweat, and the sweat kind of was washing away the blood. So he blades again, and, like, 30 minutes in, he's totally red again, and then a little while later, the blood's kind of, like, starting to go away, and then the last 10 minutes, all of a sudden, he's all red again, so it's like, he was just lacking himself open like crazy in the match. But it was just like, it's something that I'm glad, memory that I'm glad I have, that I could say that I actually watched one 60-minute Ironman match.
Katrina? Okay.
What?
Do you have any more thoughts on this one? Did you see any of Dave and Flair?
No, I didn't see any David and Flair. I think I saw maybe, like, David and Harley or something. But I didn't see any David and Flair. I just saw, really the only stuff I've seen is, like, Kerry and Flair. I've seen maybe a couple with Kevin, but they weren't really that big of a deal. You know, the Kerry one, the one in the cage on Christmas night, and I think it was 1982 with the Freebirds and starting that whole feud. And obviously the big Texas Stadium matchup that they had, so.
Yeah, and I remember there was also like a 2 out of 3 match that they had in Dallas that was really, really good. And,
yeah, I think it's on one of these DVDs I got, one of these WWE DVDs I got. Either on the Ric Flair one or the World Class one, I can't remember.
Yeah, and it's really good. And then there's a really famous match, and I've actually never seen it, and I really wish I could. It's a 60-minute match from Hawaii that is, like, possibly considered, like, their greatest match they ever had.
I want to see the match where Ric Flair put Kerry in holds, himself in holds and carries the arms for the whole hour because his dog died and he was upset and got blitzed on drugs or something.
I remember there's my favorite. Well, I haven't seen as many shoot interviews as you have, Katrina, but my favorite shoot interview is the Jack Victory one, and he tells a story about, like, when Kerry's the champion and, like, Flair's having, like, a rematch, and Kerry's just so fucked up that the match before is going on, and they had to keep telling the guys they had to keep going because they couldn't find Kerry. And then they finally found him in the bathroom, passed out. And then they kind of wake him up, and he starts to get ready, and he's tying his boots, and he laces his boots, and he gets up, and he just falls flat down because he had to lace his boot around the part of the stool or chair he was on. He laced it around the leg, and. And they went out and had, and then he said that they went out and had an awesome match.
He's the one that he went to scratch his arm at Super Clash and he ripped his bicep open or something with his blade.
Yeah, I mean, that's a shame that Kerry was so messed up half the time, because, I mean, he had awesome matches when he was totally fucked up. I imagine what he could have done if he was, like, clean and, you know, had his head on straight, you know? I mean, He's one of the most famous wrestlers that will ever be, even though he's maybe not in like Meltzer's Hall of Fame. But you know, had he been clean and you know didn't have the foot accident, he really would be talking. You really would talk about him being one of the greatest ones of all time.
I always wonder after he came back from that. I wonder why his boot was looking so weird. Little did I know.
Mm-hmm. You know, it looks weird, but it never caught my mind that it never actually moved. To me, I never noticed that it didn't move until later on after I found out, and then I watched those matches again, and then he realized his foot never moved.
You would have think they would have worked that into a huge angle, like they, you know, rolled a dump truck over his foot or something at one time.
Well, if he would have lived a few, like on his, you know, lived a little longer and into that period where they started doing the crazy stuff in the WWE, I'm sure they would have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure they would have pulled it off on, you know, on an angle or show. You know,
yeah.
Kind of like when Nash pulled off of Mad Dog's leg. You know, I'm
mm-hmm.
sure they would have done that. Unfortunately, he didn't, you know.
The Beers did that to Kerry in Las Vegas, I think.
Yeah, but that wasn't planned, and Kerry freaked out and threw his foot under the ring and kept it there until he could get his boot back.
Oh, jeez.
There were very few people that he actually, very few people he actually took the boot off in front. I mean, because he used to shower with the boot on.
Yeah.
And I know, like, I got to talk to Roddy Piper on Wrestling Observer Live one time, and he talked about he was actually one of the very few people that Kerry would take it off. And, you know, just being without the foot and, you know, with some, you know, with a few people he'd do it in front of and stuff. And then there's the crazy story where they got all high and stoned and they went out on the balcony and were just getting stoned out on the balcony. And then, like, I think Perfect and the Boss Man had freaked out and pulled them back in and stuff. Any more? Any thoughts at all on that? On the Von Erich feud, besides the little bit you saw, Craig?
Like I said, didn't see enough of it to sound. You know,
I always thought the claw was a stupid move.
Yeah.
It is stupid when it was David or Chris doing it, but Kevin, Kerry, and David actually made it work and stuff.
Oh God! I saw like maybe one match of Chris Von Erich. God, you'd think he was like one of the Mexican minis or somebody like that.
Jeez. Yeah, he was like a Mexican mini Kerry Von Erich.
God,
he was tiny. And the thing is, when he was a kid coming out in the angles, he looked kind of like he was gonna be like a big kid. You know, like he was gonna get pretty
kinda
big.
Bad, he was kind of pudgy looking. Then.
Yeah, but you know, he was kind of like, because that's how, like, when they would show pictures of Kerry. Kerry was kind of like that when he was, like, really, really young. And you kind of figured he was going to be just like Kerry, but he was just like Kerry, just about 50, 60 pounds lighter. We actually got a caller on the line, so let me take this caller here. Caller calling from area code 212. Who's this?
Hey, Big Ed, this is One Silver from the board. How you doing, partner?
Hey, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, I love your show. You guys, every week, you and Couturier, you know your old school wrestling. I never miss a cast. Tremendous show, fellas. And Couturier, when are you guys coming back with your pro wrestling flashback?
I don't know. We just had some scheduling conflict for a few months, and we're talking about it, and we'll see what we can do here after a while.
All right, you guys have been talking about Flair. I'm going to get off the phone real quick. I just wanted you guys to your feedback on when Flair, back in 96, I believe, when the Horsemen took on Kevin Green and Steve McMichael, and Ric Flair cut that promo and said, "Who you got back there, Lawrence Taylor?" I fell out of my chair when he said that. I want to know what you guys thought about that, and I'm out of here. Peace, Ed.
So, man, thanks for the call.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that match was awesome because you could just tell how you had these two giant football players, and then you have Flair and Little Arn Anderson, and they're just basically throwing them around at will and putting them where they want, and, you know, basically you just see how they were just schooling them in the ring.
If you really watch that match, you can see that Flair is in charge of that whole thing, because you have these two big football guys on one side who don't know anything about wrestling. You see Flair go over to the ref, and he'll tell the ref something. The next thing you know, the ref's over in the football player's corner telling them, okay, you know. And Flair is the ring general in that match. It is phenomenal to watch him work the crowd and work out the whole match in that ring. Okay, you know, tell him to throw me over here. Tell him to do this. And just him, his interaction with the two guys and with the ref, it's just, it's phenomenal to watch. He's so good.
That was when the first time that match, I said, oh, God, these football guys are going to beat Ric Flair and Arn Anderson. Because, you know, the celebrities always seem to win.
So yeah.
I was surprised. And that was a hell of an angle with Michael turning. I mean, nobody saw that coming, so.
No.
It was tremendous. And he was that was about the only time I liked him. That was a good turn. That was about the height of my Stephen Michael love.
the few minutes I was at, because everything else was Stephen Michael. I hated
it. He should have made Kevin Green a horseman and should have turned on Mongo.
Yeah, they picked the wrong football player, for sure.
Yeah, but Green was still playing at the time, so that's why they couldn't do it, unfortunately.
Well, plus they got Mongo out of the broadcast booth, so we should. I'll take him in the horseman, just get him out of the broadcast booth. Him and the dog.
I'm an animal lover. I'm a total animal lover, but goddamn, I wanted to stomp on that little dog. God, it was annoying.
Wow. Such vitriol for an animal.
I'll take Michael Cole over Mongo.
Yeah. I had to think about it for a second, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah. But yeah, that was. But and Arn Anderson was awesome in that match too. He was just huge.
Oh yeah,
it was awesome.
Yeah, and, that was a Great American Bash show. That was like one of the best pay per views they ever did. They had the Chris Benoit and Kevin Sullivan, Falls Count Anywhere match,
brawling into the women's locker or the women's.
That's the lady in the man's bathroom. Look at that. There is a woman in the man's gown right here in Baltimore.
That's awesome. And that match looked like they were like actually like, because you kind of, that was when I was starting to become smart to the business as far as like the, you know, the observer and stuff, and you kind of knew kind of what was going on, and you kind of look at them and like, man, are they fighting for real?
Yeah.
They're pissed at each other. That's what you would get to guys like that. I mean, Kevin Sullivan, he goes out there. If you ever watch him job guys, he freaking killed those guys. Mm. God.
I remember he did that to Kidman when Kidman was first doing like the job on TV. I mean, he beat the shit out of him. I remember when Kevin Sullivan, and this was the early 80s, and I'll just talk about this real quick, was most people remember, the Dungeon of Doom and also remember when he did the devil worshiping gimmick in Florida. But before that, Kevin Sullivan was one of the most jacked up dudes in all of wrestling.
The dude
was just cut like zero body fat. I mean, he was like Mr. Universe, dude. I mean, it was amazing. And then you see him in Florida, and there's no muscle. And then he'd come back a few months later, and he's jacked again. And then he's nothing. It's like, it was weird.
Well, he had to get Nancy, and being on the juice was the way to attract her, I guess. Either that, or he put a devil spell on her.
They looked great together back then, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Katrina, you want to go out and pick another one?
Okay, I'll pick another one. Now I'm going to pick Barry Windham.
Yeah, that was a great one. That was a great one. And
I think you know, really what I saw from them was like when Windham came back to the NWA in like late 86, they had to be like 1 hour match of Worldwide Wrestling. I think in the early 87 or something, it was an awesome match. They had an awesome match at the Crockett Cup. They just, again, just like Steamboat, you know, two guys that just worked perfectly together.
Yeah, that Crockett Cup match, that Crockett Cup match totally sticks out to me. You know, that was one of the first, you know, commercial tapes I ever bought. That was such a good match, and Barry Windham's such an underrated worker. He's just so good.
Yeah, I don't think he's underrated.
I don't think he's underrated at all. Everyone talks about how Barry was awesome. I mean, maybe newer fans who only saw the fat Barry the last couple of years might think he wasn't that great, but anyone who's seen Barry for any length of time knows that he's one of the best of all time.
Yeah, and I saw a 40-minute match with him and Flair. I think it was one of those Flora shows, the Battle of the Belts or something. They went to a double count out. And I'm trying to think. I just watched something last week on YouTube. I think it was maybe 1981 or something, with a very young Barry Windham against Ric Flair. Excuse me.
Barry, in like some ways, as far as like the ring work, was like a bigger, younger version of Flair. Because he was just like, they were just so smooth, you know.
Yeah, he was just like so smooth and fluid in the ring. Like when he'd do those suplexes, he'd just like float over on top of them and stuff like that. And this way he did everything. I mean, he was a big guy. He was about 6'6" or something like that. He's one of the better big men.
Yeah, he was pretty tall.
I remember they were going to like 60-minute draws, and they came back and did some like 90-minute time limits. So,
now, I only saw the reading about it in the aftermath. But Couture, you ever see any of the when he was doing the Yellow Dog gimmick in Florida?
No, I never saw any of that.
I've seen like plenty of pictures and like stuff in the aftermath, and he had some bloody matches. But
I know that's where they came from. When Pillman showed up in WCW as the Yellow Dog, I knew that's where that came from. But I didn't see any stuff in Florida.
But Craig, any more thoughts on Barry Windham?
Barry Windham, well, him and Flair, not a whole bunch, but I love the Horseman with Barry Windham in him. I know it wasn't the original, and I might get blasted for saying so, but Barry Windham and the Horseman worked really well.
I think most considered that group with Barry probably the best one.
That's the most talented group ever.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Definitely agreed.
And even he and Barry were like, I like Ric Flair and Barry Windham as a tag team. Did you ever see that match with the Midnight Express at one of the Clash of the Champions?
Yeah.
I mean, that was an awesome match.
I also loved Barry and Arn against Doom.
Oh, yeah. They had an awesome street fight at Starrcade 1990, I think.
Yeah. And then just, Barry has the thing going, and, Arn and Tam. I mean, when Arn Anderson is the weak link of a group, I mean, that's a pretty strong group.
Yeah, they made, the Horseman isn't anything if you don't have at least Flair, Tully, and Arn. It's not the Horseman without those guys. For me, anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
All right, what do you think, Greg?
The next feud, again, it's got many years in between, but Randy Savage, the feud he had with Randy Savage in the WWE starting 92-ish?
Yeah, 92.
Okay. And
you remember it was supposed to be, it was going to be Hogan and Flair at WrestleMania.
Right after the Rumble that Flair won. And whatever reason, Hogan was gone. I think that was right around the time that he and Vince had the falling out because of the steroids, I think,
I don't know. I knew he was taking some time off. Like, I know he was going to do a movie or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this was, like, a big falling out. And he was leaving. I mean, they played it up like he was retiring on TV. Like for a while there. So, but it was originally going to be Flair and Hogan, which
would have been amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, not in the ring.
Both of them in there at the same time.
Exactly.
Okay.
For Byron.
Hold on. What in the hell are you talking about, Craig? Not in the ring. Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan might not be a good in-ring worker, but tell me he doesn't know how to work everything else in that match.
He knows how to work the crowd.
And then he'd be in there with Ric Flair, who works the crowd just as good as him, and everyone says he can have a match with a broomstick. Well, Hulk Hogan knows a few more matches than a broomstick, so how could you say that would be horrible? It would have been so awesome. It would have been one of the greatest things ever. They just never did it, as far as other than house shows.
I don't think the work rate would have been all that great on Hogan's part. Okay. But the crowd would have made the match. Ric Flair would have made the match. And Vince McMahon would be running all the way to the bank during WrestleMania 8.
Yeah,
I don't know if that ended up a worker, to be honest with you.
And
what? I said I never thought Hogan was that bad of a worker, to be honest with you.
No, it's just, you know, Craig's doing his little snob gimmick, you know, where he likes to criticize people that he didn't see a lot of, or because, I don't know why.
Are you kidding me? I saw more Hogan than anybody else. Are you out of your mind?
Yeah, but how could you not think him and Ric Flair could have a good match?
I don't think it would be bad. I just don't think it would be, you know, 5 stars by any stretch of the imagination.
Anything less than 4 1/4 is unfathomable. They could have, it would be possible they would have had it. They just never did it other than house shows.
Anyway, well, for whatever reason, Hogan got the spot got given to Randy Savage. And so Flair basically says to Savage, I slept with your old lady, Elizabeth, and I got pictures to prove it. Which, by the way, might have happened. Anyway, so that sets the feud off.
Well, I don't think it would have happened because actually she used to be locked in the dressing room by herself because she didn't like no one being around her.
Yeah, it was shortly after this that they got divorced in real life, I think.
When you look back at it, it's nothing like really risque or anything, but at the time, this is one of the more risque angles that the WWE kind of did at the time.
Yeah.
You know.
But and, there was... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say there was some awesome photos of her in some bikinis in it.
Oh, jeez. I stalled for that. There was that, and then the other really notable match, I want to say, help me out, Katrera, because my mind is not what it used to be. Starrcade 95.
I know they had a match there. I never saw it.
It's the one where, for whatever reason, Flair tells Savage to go ahead and blade him during the match.
Yeah, and he just, like, hits the biggest gusher of all time.
Ear to ear. I've never seen so much blood on a man. Number one, why you would give the blade to your opponent, and if that man was jacked up Randy Savage, I don't understand that. It'd be like asking New Jack to get you.
Who would you pick, New Jack or Randy Savage?
Oh, Randy Savage in a heartbeat.
It would be the same, because I'm sure they had the same amount of cocaine in their system.
That's true. Oh, Lord. Yeah. That match, the 95 Starrcade, I mean, from top to bottom, was phenomenal, if I'm thinking
also,
of the right
earlier
one.
In that year, they started the feud with, you know, remember Flair put Savage's, put Angelo Poffo in figure four or something. That set off, like, a huge feud. It actually started to, turn around business for WCW, like, before the NWO came in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And before the Savage feud, that was like where you had the like the Piper feud, right?
You mean in the WWF?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the Piper feud when he first came in.
Yeah, and that's one of the first times that like Vince ever got like was like physical in an angle.
He got killed by a chair by Roddy Piper.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, Piper just, like, Flair just ran over, you know, Piper was doing commentary, and Flair went over there kind of, like, talking smack, and they got into it, and then Vince just takes a chair shot. It was awesome.
It was one of those wooden chairs, so when he hit Vince in the back, it sounded like Vince's back was broken or something like that.
And then you have to talk about the, it's not really, in a way you can kind of throw this into like multiple views, because the Royal Rumble for Flair actually won the title.
Yeah.
I love that match so much because it's like Ric Flair squared off one-on-one with everybody in the WWE in one match, and it's also the last time I got to see him lock up with Kerry Von Erich. And that's just one of that's probably, that might be my favorite Ric Flair match of all time, other than when Kerry beat him for the title.
That's my favorite Royal Rumble match of all time.
That one and the one where Austin won here in San Antonio are my two favorites. But, yeah, I mean, that was just such an awesome Royal Rumble. Because I was, like, so much more a fan of a WCW than WWF at the time. And it was kind of like, it was like, in a way, to me, when I was watching it, it was like the NWA versus the WWF, and the NWA guys kicking everyone's ass and won the match.
You look at the guys in that Royal Rumble, it was like a who's who of like some of the biggest stars that there would be. I mean, you got like Kerry Von Erich, British Bulldog, Jimmy Snuka, Rick Martel, Sid Vicious, Jake the Snake, Savage, Hogan.
Wow.
Just about everybody in there was a name at one point or another.
Yeah, it was an awesome freaking Royal Rumble.
When I saw him coming out at number three, I said he's winning.
I was hoping he was winning, but I had a feeling he'd be like second to last, you know, the last two, and end up losing, you know, just because he's a bad guy and he'd always, you know, be the foil. But no, he pulled it off, and I just remember marking out. That's to me, and you know, I say he was like, I was cheering for him because it was like the NWA against the WWF, but I had always hated Flair before then. I always hated Flair, and to me, this is a match where, like, Flair became like pretty much just one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. You know, during the match.
It was funny when I was a kid that so many of my friends just absolutely hated Ric Flair. And I understood why, you know, because he always cheated to win, and you know, he always had the horsemen out there when things got rough. But just him in his suits and the way he carried himself, I couldn't help but love that guy.
Yeah, he was a cool heel.
Yeah,
he was like one of the original cool heels. He's like I don't know, like the Freebirds or somebody. The Freebirds were cool heels, you know?
Yeah, he was. I understood why people hated him, but I loved the dude.
All right, so is it my turn?
Yes,
it is.
Turn.
All right, well, this is a real short series because basically it was a TV match. TV match on Saturday Night TV, but it's one of the best matches I ever saw in the 80s on Saturday Night at a TV on TBS, and that is Ric Flair versus Stan Houston. And before Craig starts moaning and crying about how skinny Stan Houston was, this match was awesome. It was like, because Stan Houston hadn't really been on TV too much, and he was kind of like, maybe he might have had like a couple matches against jobbers or whatever, but he just came out, and it's like Ric Flair, the world champion, against this young kid. And then all of a sudden, this young kid is matching Flair move for move and got Flair on the ropes. And all of a sudden, here's like Dusty Rhodes. There's, you know, all the faces, you know, the top faces are coming out to ringside to come to watch the match and cheer him on. It's one of those matches where you kind of start to think, oh, my God, is he actually going to, like, beat Ric Flair, and then like Flair finally like gets him in the figure four. I think he takes his boot, works his, like takes the boot off of him and puts him in the figure four. And finally, Sam Houston submits, you know, after like fighting for a long time, and it was just an awesome, awesome match.
Sam Houston was like he's kind of like the 1-2-3 kid of that area back then, you know.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to explain it.
He was as skinny as him, that's for sure.
And hey, he ended up married to a baby doll, and that's like, you know, like X-Pac in China.
You gotta go throw up.
I think I'd rather watch Sam the Baby Doll fucking than X-Pac in China.
I really wasn't none of them.
But I mean, it was
I'm pretty sure.
Awesome.
I'm more confident the baby doll is the real woman. So,
But yeah, I mean, it wasn't a few, but it was just, to me, that's just, I just remember just being on my sofa, just cheering Sammy's, like, cheering this young kid on against Ric Flair. And Ric Flair made him look like a million bucks.
Ugh. Is it my turn?
Tis.
I go Dusty Rhodes.
Oh, that's a given.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as far as interviews, that's probably his number one feud.
Do what?
The back and forth interviews, as far as Ric Flair feuding with someone, because let's be honest, Barry Windham was not the greatest promo guy. I'm saying he was bad. He was decent for his time, but they didn't really have that great promos. Him and Steamboat had great little angles, but as far as promos, you know, Ricky, that was never Ricky's game, was promos. And as far as the Von Erichs, Kerry was in a good promo. Him and David had some good promos on him, I remember. But, you know, it's not like he cut, like, a whole bunch of them. And but as far as, like, promos back and forth, you can't beat Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes. And I love the one of Ric Flair DVD where they basically show all the interviews leading up to the match with him and Dusty. And it's just like you got the Hard Times promo. You got, like, Flair's – I mean, it's just – it's like four back-to-back classic all-time promos leading up to one match.
Yeah, I remember that story when it was Nikita and Flair in the cage in, I think, Atlanta. And Flair was like a tweener at this point. You know, he was kind of a heelish, but he was also he had been feuding with Nikita, and so he beats Nikita, and Nikita and Ivan are double teaming Flair in the cage, and then Dusty comes out and clears out the Russians, and then he's trying to help Flair up, and Flair's just yelling at Dusty, and all of a sudden Ole and Arn Anderson come in, and they jump Dusty, and they you know, just destroy his leg. The story was that they broke it, and I don't know how long it took them to get him out of the ring, because the crowd had gotten so close to the ring that it's like almost a riot situation. I thought that was awesome.
I remember all the baby faces and like the mid card. Well, most of them were like the mid to lower card baby faces were trying to get into the ring. And they were, like, being kicked off the cage and you know, and stuff. So, I mean, it was a really good, awesome angle.
And they had to take the cage apart to get Dusty out of the ring for his broken leg.
Yeah, Dusty was screaming like a little bitch up there like they did. And, like, you know, he sold it like $1 million.
He sold that injury amazingly. It was so believable. When I was a little kid, man, I would watch WWF. And then right after that, the block of television we had, it would go into NWA. And I was convinced at like 12 years old that WWF was fake, and then the real stuff came on afterwards. You know, because there was blood, and it was so much more believable than, you know, Doink the Clown.
Yeah. And then so I also remember the angle where, like, the Four Horsemen, like, followed Dusty in the car, and then they jumped him, and they, like, they kind of, like, did the angle where they broke his arm.
Yeah, and right before they hit his arm with the baseball bat, he said, "Make it good," right there on TV. Sound like something TNA would do.
Uh-huh.
And not edited out.
Actually, yeah,
they see Chris Cyborg over title. Did you see that?
Yeah, they did. Chris Cyborg got popped for steroids. Who would have thunk it?
Who knew?
Yeah.
How could anyone even think that? I mean, wow, that just blows my mind.
I got to see Dusty and Flair in the ring together at the Bash of 1988. They did a tour that came up here, and it was Flair and the rest of the Horsemen against the Road Warriors, Dusty, and Nikita in a cage. And that was the main event. It was just a house show, but the NWA got up here twice in all the years I watched NWA, and that was one of them. And it was pretty darn cool to be able to see that live.
You know, they actually came here a few times. It was like around the period where like Dusty and Magnum were doing like the James Boys, but and because that was one of the main events. But also one of the matches they came, it was of course Dusty against Ric Flair. And I remember going with my dad, and just like every time Flair wrestled in San Antonio, my dad before the matches would tell me, "Look, this is just San Antonio. He's not going to lose his title here. Don't start crying when so-and-so loses." And, of course, I'm like, no, this time Terry's going to win. Yeah. This time Dusty's going to win, like stupid little mark that I was. And it was an awesome match. They had an awesome match, and it was great to see actually see Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes live, and it was awesome. And you'll
did
never
they do the
guess,
Dusty finish?
Yeah, I was going to say, you'll never guess what they did for the finish.
I remember, you remember reading those results, those arena results in PWI magazine, and they had all the Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair matches, and every one of them, Ric Flair wins on disqualification, went on reversal of the pinfall or something like that. And everyone said, okay, this might not be on the up and up here, or either Dusty Rhodes is fucking stupid, he gets himself disqualified. Every time
you would think after the third night, he would, I think after like the third or fourth night, he would have gone,
And then if it was Ric Flair against anybody else, it was Ric Flair being disqualified for throwing the guy over the top rope.
Yeah. That was one of those finishes. To me, that's one of those finishes that if you do it once, you always have to do it to make it seem consistent. Or else you're kind of stupid.
They used to do it pretty consistently back then. I don't know how many times I saw him and Kerry wrestle and
no,
he got disqualified
to
be through Kerry over the top rope.
You know, like, but there would be plenty of times there would be a lot of, like, interference that would never get reversed. So I always thought that was weird. Maybe the referees weren't watching the tape then. I don't know. I don't know what to do.
It was a great spot because it had, like, a lot of heat because it was, like, the easy out. And you could, you know, no matter how awesome.
It's a good finish. I mean.
Yeah, how much of a fiery comeback the babyface is on. And it's like, yeah, he's going to do it. Boom. Over the top rope. Match is over, feud continues.
So you went to that show in Seattle, is that what you said, Craig?
Yeah.
Okay, I was looking up the results for it, but there's no results here.
No, shocking. They actually.
It was on August the 3rd, 1988, when Craig went to this show. I bet he didn't know that.
Good Lord. I know it was in summertime because I wasn't driving then, and I lived in Port Orchard, and I had to take a one-hour ferry ride to get to the other side of the Sound, and then we walked forever to get to the Mercer Arena. And they had teamed up with the guys from Portland Wrestling. So, like, Playboy Buddy Rose and Colonel DeBeers were on the show, and the Grappler, and then there was only, like, two or three, you know, quote-unquote NWA matches on the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool, though. Shall I go next?
Yes, you shall.
I shall. My next pick is The Undertaker. And they wrestled at WrestleMania 18 in a no disqualification match. And I'm not 100% sure, but it might have been the last time there was ever juice on WrestleMania. They set this up. If you remember, Maven was wrestling Taker for the Hardcore Championship, and he was at No Way Out, and Flair interfered. And so Flair, or,
no, you're
excuse
wrong.
Me, it's right here. It's right here. Go ahead. Go ahead. Tell me how it is.
At No Way Out, Undertaker wrestled The Rock.
No.
He wrestled The Undertaker. May even wrestled The Undertaker, like, on Raw or something.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I don't remember The Undertaker wrestling Maven on the pay-per-view.
Undertaker?
I mean, they had that awesome spot on the Royal Rumble, and that was awesome. But I don't remember them wrestling on the pay-per-view.
Anyway, basically, Taker...
You need to stop reading from Wikipedia.
I'm reading Wikipedia word for word, and it has failed me twice this evening. Anyway, Taker beat up David Flair, which was brutal.
Oh, yeah, and OVW.
He was OVW, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that was awesome.
One of the only times that WWF ever acknowledged OVW as
and when they
partners.
The Spirit Squad back.
Right, that's true. And so this sends Flair into a frenzy, and basically Taker said he was going to do the same thing to his daughter. And so no disqualification match at WrestleMania 18, and this match was awesome.
The biggest pop of the night, maybe. Well, not the Hogan and Rock got bigger pop, but Arn Anderson hitting Spinebuster out of nowhere. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a pretty great feud, and
didn't really even go that long either. But it sticks out in my head. Obviously, not as well as I thought, but yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Any more thoughts, Kutura?
No, that's about it.
Okay. You want to pick one then, Kutura?
I told you I didn't make a list, so let me think real quick. Ronnie Garvin.
Oh, jeez. I'm sitting this one out.
I love it.
This was a weird feud because as long as it was, you know, Ronnie challenging, it was awesome. And if everyone was into it, and then, when Ronnie was a champion and Flair was a challenger, it was kind of a different story, but I love these matches just because of the simple fact that these two motherfuckers just chop the living shit out of each other, and they'd both be having blood just coming out of their pores. It was just awesome watching them kill each other.
Yeah, they just slapped the piss at each other, and I remember one of the feuds got set up when he went on the dream date with Precious, and it ended up with Mrs. Dwayne Lively. He wasn't Precious, and he knocked out Ric Flair. And Flair's robe is sitting there open while he's knocked down on the ground, and his underwear showing, and he throws J.J. Dillon in the pool. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was great. That's one of the best angles he's hit on Saturday night.
Probably one of the most unlikely title wins of all time, I'd say, when Ronnie Garvin beat him.
Yeah, actually, because I never actually expected him to beat, you know, be one of the ones to beat him, especially, you know, when he had, like, Dusty and a few other guys. But, I just remember how intense and how brutal those matches were and stuff. It makes me, remembering those matches really makes me wish I could have seen him and Wahoo have their feud, because you can only imagine how much Wahoo beat the shit out of him.
Nothing about Ronnie Garvin and Flair, Craig?
I said I'm sending this one out. I'm not a fan of Ronnie Garvin.
WWF Hardcore Champion, The Undertaker, to win the title on SmackDown on February the 5th of 2002.
Okay, where did No Way Out come into there?
No Way Out, that was in, I don't know when that was. That was at the end of February. No Way Out, he faced The Rock.
Oh, okay. Well, it doesn't matter.
just because it was one mulatto, that, you know, you got to confuse them. I mean, come on. That's like saying Alex Goff looks like Rodney. Well, he kind of does, but, you know, that's besides the point.
I'm not touching that one. How about Ric Flair's feud with his daughter, Ashley? I'm just kidding.
He lost that one.
Yeah, she sucked a punch, too. No, we only got like 15 minutes of airtime left. I don't think we can go through a Ric Flair show about feuds without mentioning Shawn Michaels' name.
Yeah, was it really a feud, though?
I really said the one.
I mean, like, I'm sorry, what did you take, sir?
Yeah.
So they really just had the one match. Well, it was as much as a feud as Ric Flair had with Sam Houston.
Yeah, but I mean, the match was just, the match was awesome. I mean, the ending of the match, you know, I mean, as corny as it was just awesome, you know. You know, Shawn Michaels, you know, Ric Flair saying, come on, and Shawn Michaels, you know, giving the I love you.
super kicking him.
Fresh, Shawn Michaels didn't vomit his guts up when he did that I saw you moonsault under the table.
Oh, that looked horrid. Just the whole idea that if Flair wanted to be retired, he wanted to be retired by Shawn Michaels, and then it, you know, it builds to the match and then the Monday Night Raw following. Just that whole thing when he quote unquote retired. You know, I wish he would have stayed retired, but he's done some pretty funny stuff in TNA and has actually had a couple of pretty decent matches in TNA as well. But just the whole few months leading up to his, again, quote-unquote retirement, I thought it was very well done and just thought the match was great. And I don't even think it was the best match at that WrestleMania. But it was darn good.
Yeah, and we're down to 12 minutes. Let me get the plug out of the way. Everyone, check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com. And I actually want to cut off with 6 minutes to go because I actually got one more interview I want to play that I want to get on the live feed. But you know, we're actually leaving out like a lot of feuds. I mean, we really haven't talked about him and Nikita. We haven't talked about him in World Warrior Hawk, him in Fujinami, you know, him
Ricky
and Harley Race. You know, I mean, basically, any time Ric Flair's been in a feud, it's been a great feud just because, you know,
Sting.
Ric Flair. Sting. I mean, we haven't even talked about Sting.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he made Sting. You know, Sting was like a big up-and-comer and everyone was noticing Sting, but he made Sting in one match in that 45-minute draw on the Clash of the Champions, and he made Sting into a super main eventer for years and years and years, still to this day because of that one match. And
that would be the
freaking
best example of putting a guy over without even the guy having to win, you know?
Yeah. It's like, how the fuck we almost not even mention that on the show? But I mean, they just had so many great matches and angles and. Who can remember when everything got fucked up when Sting broke his leg? And
I think he turned on Sting about 45 times.
Yeah.
What about
the first one was
Ricky
the best
Martin's
one,
nose.
Though. The first one was the best one with Ole. You know, when Ole's, you know, laying down the law, basically, and what, you know, what the deal is and everything. And that was awesome.
What'd you say, Craig?
I was going to say, what about Flair breaking Ricky Morton's nose?
Yeah, that was good stuff.
When that was
awesome. Amazing. The concrete, and that was back in the old days. That's back when they're doing an angle like that, they give you a piece of sandpaper and say, you know, go scuff your face up. You know, we know this makeup bullshit.
Yeah,
and he just basically just was rubbing his face back and forth on the concrete, and then it was all bloody. And then Ricky had to wrestle with the mask on.
Yep.
They worked together as well. Ricky Morton, they got Ricky Morton over like as a pretty big single star at that time.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he was going to beat him.
Hey, I remember. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then this one wasn't as long as this one, but he had a short little, awesome little feud with Bobby Eaton.
Hmm.
Remember that one, Couture? They had a couple matches.
I remember they had a match at the Clash of the Champions, like two out of three falls.
And Flair won like the first both of them, but I mean they had maybe it was a TV match before where Eaton won actually, like a non-title match, I think. And that was awesome.
Yeah, I remember they also had some matches like on the main event back in '89. Those white working and those guys worked together. They were awesome.
And then Ric Flair and Tommy Wildfire Rich had some awesome matches too back in the day. You know.
I never saw any Tommy Rich Flair matches. Was that in Georgia?
Even Hacksaw Butch Reed had some awesome matches with Ric Flair back then.
Ric Flair made so many people by being the traveling world champion, you know?
Yeah.
He was probably the greatest. I mean, look at all the places he went, all the things he did. He probably is the greatest world champion of all time.
Definitely.
If there is.
Yeah, definitely.
You know?
Sure. Well, like I said, I want to get this one interview in on the live feed. So you got any parting words before we go, Craig?
No. Have a great weekend.
Okay. Couture, anything you want to talk about real quick?
No, I'm going to go take some drugs.
Well, why don't you mail them to me?
You can get them over the counter.
Out of the three of us, I'm sure that you have drugs, Ed.
Yeah. Oh, I do. I'm smoking the whole show.
Yeah, I'm going to put some drugs in a package with my address on it and mail it somewhere. Yeah, right.
That's very Buddy Wayne of you.
Just don't put to Jeff Hardy. But we'll be back next week, and if we don't have a guest, it's Craig's turn to pick a wrestler to spotlight.
Yeah,
I think that's a better name than Wrestling Views or whatever. But everybody, come back next week, and we will leave you with this awesome Ric Flair promo.
When you were trying to become
and announcer. Your dad was on the board of directors and voted for me to be the world champion. Woo!
Gonna be on fire. You know what I'm talking about?
Woo! I just, Allah! You really want to jump on